Hello, listeners, and welcome to a special episode of the Rocket Punch Cast, kind of, sort of, not really. If you don't recognize my voice, this is Cameron, one third of the Rocket Punch crew. Giving you guys, I know we had talked about it in our podcast feed. If you don't remember, just go listen to past episodes here. But one of the big projects that we've done, I know we used to do before, and we're still continuing to do, is our Creator Spotlight podcast. It was a really great podcast that we had to actually kind of intro and talk to different creators and content creators and people that do kind of cool geek gaming, even beyond that, projects within our area and beyond, whoever we can get on the show. It's been a great podcast before. We're bringing it back. And we decided here at Rocket Punch that we were going to kind of intro this instead of it having its own podcast feed. There's a bunch of episodes. I think there's like 11 or 12 right now that are up on a separate feed. We were actually going to integrate it into the Rocket Punchcast feed. So that way you guys, you're already listening to the Rocket Punchcast, and we felt that it was really important. The Creator Spotlight itself is really important for us, and we felt it was even more important to kind of get that in front of more listeners. So we've actually brought that up into our main feed. I think we're going to take some of the older episodes and kind of pump them into this feed as well. But this is not an older episode. This is a brand new Creator Spotlight here, which will now be kind of joined in with the Rocket Punch Cast whenever we get these recorded. So definitely be on the lookout for those, and we'll keep you guys abreast on that information. But that's your PSA for listening here. Guys, again, I'm Cameron from the Rocket Punch crew, and this is Creator Spotlight. This time, we are sitting here with... someone I think we've been trying to get you on for the longest time.
We've talked about it for a while, very glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here. This is Peter Luker, also known as Float.
That's right.
There's no crazy spelling there. It's just Float.
F-L-O-A-T.
A local artist here in Huntsville, Alabama, where we're based out of. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here finally. Yeah.
Yes. You're like, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Once we nailed down the day, I'm like, finally, it's happening. Yes. Really, really, really excited to kind of get to talk with you. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. So let's jump into our Creator Spotlight with you here.
Yeah.
First and foremost, we're going to give you the softball questions. We don't want to scare you away from our listeners here in Rocket Punch. Tell us more about yourself and kind of what you do as Float.
So I'm formerly out of Atlanta. I grew up just south of Atlanta and lived there just about till I was in my mid-20s, late-20s. And I've been in Huntsville now for about 5 years. I've been drawing and painting, which is what I do by trade. And I've been doing that for coming on over 10 years. And for the last five, I've been a professional artist here in Huntsville. So almost as soon as I got here, I got a lot of encouragement to start putting things out in the world and actually showing off what I've been doing, because it just piles up when it just sits in your closet and all of your friends have all of your artwork and they're tired of seeing it and looking at it. So other people need to see it. So I started really small, selling at a couple local artist markets. Did Low Mill a lot with the Flying Monkey. They do Saturday markets. And so that's really how I got my start as far as getting in front of people for the first time and actually standing next to my art and taking credit for it. So that, which is out of character because I'm pretty shy.
You have to say, like, this is mine.
Yeah, exactly. And really kind of take credit for it and say, like, do you like it? What do you think? And the response I got from Huntsville has just been amazing. People really responded to it. They really liked it. And, like, some days that's all you get out there is, like, good praise. And so, like, that just means the world to me whenever anybody has something nice to say about it. So I've just kind of been feeding off that and keep going. Keep drawing and painting.
That's good. I mean, as an artist, I think that's one of the big things you kind of have to do, is there has to be a passion for that when you're sitting there and doing your work and doing what you're trying to do and achieve in that space.
Absolutely. I just enjoy drawing and painting. Again, I got started because I play a lot of video games, watch a lot of movies, and like I enjoy doing all those things, but like when I started doing art and drawing, it was a way to fill my time and have something to show for it, like something physical to show. And so that's really what kind of kept me going. Like I love waking up the next morning and going back to my work desk and seeing all these cool things that I've made, and that's really just gets me excited. I work all the time. I do this full time. I run my own business, and I work sometimes 50, 60 hours a week, and 40 or 50 of that is at my work desk painting and drawing and designing, and I just really enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, and you should. That's a big passion there, and it's good you've already leaked into the second question there of kind of what... Is there anything specific that kind of got you started into what you're doing now as Float?
Yeah. My dad passed away. That was actually a big genesis of it. Right after he passed, I got a little bit of money, and I went overseas. I just kind of got out of town. And one of the places I ended up, I landed in Europe, and I spent about 3 months in Europe. And I, for a lot of that, actually camped. And what happened was, you're in Europe, so I'm like, I got to go to some art museums. I just felt, you feel the obligation. You're there, you've got to go do this. And it just wasn't speaking to me. And it was great. It was fantastic. And going to like the Modern Museum of Art in London, and it was interesting, but it just wasn't really grabbing me. But for some reason, art was on my mind. And when I got to Holland, I found graffiti, and it just really, truly grabbed a hold of me. I would just walk the streets for days on end, walking up and down alleys, seeing just absolutely incredible artwork. And it was like every alleyway was a gallery, and it was bright and colorful and vibrant. And there were cartoon characters that I've been following my entire lives that were drawn on the walls by these, to me, unnamed artists. And I mean, and it just kind of, I started drawing from there, and I have been drawing ever since.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find your cartoon character at the local museum.
No, not at all. So that was a huge thing to just see it embraced by a community of people, specifically graffiti artists. And it just spoke to me. And I was actually gifted, this is another big part of it, I was gifted a journal right before I left for my trip. And about the first 10 pages are writings, just because that's what you do in a journal, is what I thought.
Yeah, it usually is.
And all of a sudden, once I started seeing graffiti and just kind of paying attention to art in general, I started drawing in it. And about the last, I finished it. I've hardly finished reading a book, let alone writing a book. And I wouldn't even say I've written it, but I filled an entire book with drawing sketches and writings and all kinds of mixed match of ideas and just throwing things down on the page. And I'd never really done that before, and I was 25, so I got started late, as far as like, wasn't a kid when I started drawing. I started in my late 20s.
Yeah.
30, it'll be 33 next month, so.
And that's one of the cool things, and specifically with art, but not necessarily with art all the time, is that it's not something that you have to be a savant and like, oh, you're some young prodigy at age 8 or something. Sure. Like that, you have to draw. And it's another thing, and even speaking to your point, it's really interesting that you were drawn to art, but it wasn't necessarily what most people, not going to say all, but most people consider or think of when they think of art. They're thinking, sure, of the Mona Lisa and
exactly,
Picasso, yeah, and all the other people. Picasso's crazy in its own right. But actually looking at graffiti and looking kind of at that type of genre of art, which is, you know, maybe I might ruffle feathers here, but graffiti is still art. It may not be
absolutely
what you know.
Absolutely. I mean, it draws on all kinds of things, and it's some of the more modern art that we have is graffiti. And again, like type. I mean, I didn't quite understand it when I first started looking at it, but graffiti is all typography. It's pulling letters, stretching letters, adding color, adding dimension, adding shading, shadows, 3D, and all of these things. And we see that every single day in every cereal box, every TV advertisement. There's graphic design everywhere. And so graffiti kind of seemed to take that idea and run with it and create an entire art form around it.
Yeah.
And I realized I couldn't draw like realistic stuff. That was not in my wheelhouse. I tried and
join the club.
Yeah, it just didn't come naturally. So something about drawing letters. I've always really enjoyed the spoken word. It's something I like listening to talk radio, and I just like the spoken word. And so something about the idea of making the written word as expressive as it could possibly be really just spoke to me on a fundamental level. I mean, I have about 14 tattoos on them, and about 11 of them are words. And so that was the case before this ever happened. I had that written on, I had words written on me, and that kind of mentality that words were pretty and they could be. And so when I found graffiti, it was kind of the embodiment of all that idea in one foul swoop. And again, it just grabbed a hold of me. I haven't put down a pencil or paint since, and just kind of kept running with it.
That's good. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about it more as we kind of dig deep in here, but that's a strong passion. And a lot of the people that have been on Creator Spotlight in the past, and even us as Rocket Punch and doing what we're doing, and like, when you're doing creative stuff, not necessarily when you're not, when you're doing something, you kind of have to have that passion. And definitely, I mean, it's watching you now. It's like, I can see it. I can feel it in the room right now. Like, oh, it's so powerful. And it's just so cool. And so next question I've got for you, Pete, it could be definitely from the graffiti as well. So what is so unique about your art and your designs and your pieces from other people's? If you're a big artist fan, so I definitely, for everybody listening as well, we'll put it on the main feed. We have had another artist on Creator Spotlight before, the Black Rabbit. His name's Cameron Jeffrey. He's actually also from Atlanta.
Is he?
I need to hook you guys up. He's super, super awesome. But it was one of the questions we asked him. And it's because each artist you're going to run into, some of them can be similar, but they always have something unique about them. Mm-hmm. It's always them putting some type of unique spin on what they do. So I'm curious, like, what are you bringing to the table?
The fascinating thing about art in general is that we all have our own techniques and styles, and we all come at it from completely different angles, whether you're classically taught or self-taught. You learn techniques at this kind of slow but steady pace, and you learn how to integrate them in different ways. And it's this very natural progression with these really weird spikes in it sometimes. Like, somebody may show you something or teach you a skill or just throw an idea at you that sparks something that you didn't ever think about. And so you're gaining skills and techniques and using them in a way that you feel comfortable until you feel comfortable changing it and modifying it and adding to it. So every artist does that naturally. It's kind of this natural progression. And so I would say some of the skills that I bring to it are, I mean, just the use of a paint can, a spray paint can, a rattle can, whatever you might call it. That was the first art tool that I ever used. And coming at it from that meant that it wasn't a pencil that was the first thing I used. It wasn't an eraser. It wasn't a marker. Of course, I use those things and have used them all the time. But that was the first thing that I ever picked up and tried to actually create. So while I was in Holland, I started painting legally. And so I was doing it with spray paint. And coming back home and kind of bringing those techniques, I've kind of figured out how to use them in ways that I don't see other people doing. I mean, just mixing colors and using traditional graffiti techniques and bringing them to a canvas in a way. I use a lot of stencils as well. And so I've sprayed through the stencils with multiple colors. I also think I bring a sense of nostalgia. I mean, I'm a big cartoon fan. I love all the 90s cartoons, Doug and All Real Monsters.
Man, the kids don't know about those.
Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain.
You're throwing stuff these young kids don't know about here. They don't know about Nickelodeon.
I'm a huge Simpsons fan, like at least the first 10 years. I kind of dropped off, but like the first 10 years of the golden years, and they were amazing. But that aesthetic of the Simpsons really kind of influences the kind of stuff that I like to draw. I'm a big fan of simple, strong, bold imagery, and like the Simpsons kind of embodies that in a way that like, it spoke to me as a child, but I wasn't doing any kind of artwork at the time, but it's something that's always stuck with me and kind of brought with me. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but...
No. Yeah. Like I said, as I tell everybody on here, there's not a right answer. We're having that conversation, and I think that definitely helps kind of, again, not necessarily stepping out of that norm, but kind of letting people think of art as not just a fixed point. Art can be a lot of different things.
Surely, yeah.
And, you know, when people think, I'm sure, about art, the first thing that come to mind is the little paintbrush. Yep, and you're looking at, you're thinking Bob Ross with his little paint colors.
And happy little trees. absolutely. Or a landscape. Yeah, I mean, and truly that is art. But the beauty of it is that we all come at it from completely different angles. I mean, even if you have someone that does something similar, it's probably done or created in a completely different way. A different technique, a different set of skills, a different process. And so that's kind of the beauty of it.
And it's so cool. It was probably serendipitous. I was on my computer working on a bunch of stuff last night, and this video popped up on my Facebook feed about there's a guy, 70-year-old man, in Japan, and he retired, and he wanted to paint, but he didn't have, he was cheap. And that's what the video said. He was super cheap. So he's like, how can I paint? So this guy, you see these like immaculate Japanese paintings, all done, I kid you not, in Microsoft Excel.
No kidding.
He uses Microsoft Excel to make these huge paintings. I'm like, what is going on? And then that speaks to kind of what you're talking about. It's like, it doesn't, everybody's going to bring their own tools and use their own things to create their own art.
Exactly. And we all, again, we all come at it just, what most people start with a pencil, but then they may learn to do blending with graphite, or they may start with paint and they're using the same blending techniques, but they're using paint instead of graphite. I mean, again, like, you just gather little bits of skills and techniques and tricks along the way, and you're inspired by other artists and friends and colleagues. And it's just beautiful. Like that, I don't know. I just enjoy it. I mean, I think it's amazing.
No. You should enjoy that. It's art, and it's in talking about, like you said, talking about your art in particular. And I've seen it and watched it. Like it's, I like your art. The style you do, I really am drawn to it. It's just very cool. I'm a big unique type of guy. Like not that I don't like the stuff that the general stuff everybody makes. I do like that too, but I always like when I see something different and I know like this feels different, there's something unique about this, whatever spin they put on it and how that created. And a lot of the stuff I've seen from you has been just awesome.
I appreciate that.
Just the logo and one of the last times I saw you in your shop in Low Mill, which is
that other people don't know what Low Mill is.
We're gonna get to Low Mill. Okay, we'll talk about Low Mill. Sure. We'll educate everybody about that, but the shirt I got, just, and it's not even necessarily, like, with your particular style, and the thing I like is that looking at something, when I look at that shirt, for people you can't see, of course, you're listening, the shirt is just red. There's nothing on the front at all. But on the bottom, I think
right side,
the bottom right side, there's this cool octopus cartoonish character.
Yes. So I got one of the things, again, that really gets me excited is I like simple things. I like strong. I like logos. I'm a big fan of logos. I just think that simple, strong imagery like that is very cool to me. It just speaks to me. And so that's a lot of my original stuff is kind of done in that style. And the particular, the octopus that we're talking about is one of the first things somebody ever asked me to draw was a squirrel. And I just kind of came up with this very simple, abstracted logo style of squirrel. And so I've kind of run with that idea, and I've done a number of sticker designs as well as t-shirt designs with similar animals and that kind of just continuing that series.
Yeah. And it's just the thing I really liked about this shirt is that it wasn't, what's the best way to, it didn't, I like, you talked about simplicity. All the shirt is the logo, and then on the back, top right back, it says float.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I love just kind of, in looking at that shirt, it was like just this deep red shirt, but you're immediately drawn to that guy on the
big
side.
Big white and black octopus, staring at you. And kind of almost crawling around you.
And I guess for me, I like that it's something outside the norm. Usually when you have a shirt, you got your logo on the front, your stuff on the front, but having that off to the side, it's different. It's not, drawing them over to that side, and it's
exactly
so unique.
That comes from having the graffiti background and just kind of being entrenched in those ideas. Like when you're doing a piece on a building, you've got to think about what it's going to look like from 2 blocks away, what it's going to look like from 6 blocks away. Is there a particular spot down the street where that's the only spot it's ever going to be seen from? Because if you're under the building or at the street corner, you're never going to see it up there. And so I really kind of like the idea of playing with placement. And a lot of the more cartoony and more pop culture pieces I do have that same aesthetic where I'm kind of wrapping a face around a canvas or blowing it up, so you're very much in their face and it's very large, and kind of playing with the crop of the image. And I like working on non-traditional canvases. And so the idea of doing this shirt like that was to just do something different. I'd never seen anything quite like that before. I mean, similar things maybe, but I just wanted mine to be different. And that was my way of doing it, was just moving the placement and doing something simple like that. Just kind of really got me excited. And that's where the idea came from, is again, looking at graffiti pieces and street art and saying, like, they're paying attention to where they're putting it. It's not just that it's on a blank wall, and there's plenty of things to do that too and do it well. But the idea that it could be seen from a different angle, and that's important to think about.
Yeah. And I know you've had experience in putting your art on buildings. I know that we actually have another Creator Spotlight episode on that as well. Pints and Pixels. Mm-hmm. You did the art in the building for that. It was really, really cool.
So I was able to do the mural in the back hallway. It's a big Mario scene with some original characters of mine. And then I also did, there's four tabletops, if you've been in there. They're all collaged and then clear coated with resin. I did those as well.
Oh, okay. I did not know about the tables. Yeah, so that's super awesome.
So they commissioned me to do all four of those as well. Those were a lot of fun. So that's actually, again, I'm always bouncing around. So I would do these collage top tables, and I did that for about a year and a half. And that was actually one of the major reasons that I got into trying to sell art in the first place, because I was doing these enormous coffee tables with nowhere to put them. I mean, they're literally stacking up in the garage. My wife's like, well, what are you going to do with them? Like, I'm like, I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. I just want to make them. And so they ended up going into a gallery space, and that was some of the first stuff I was trying to sell was these giant collage top tables. And then I'll go and do video game stuff for 6 months, and I'll go do cartoons for 6 months, and then I'll go to science fiction for 6 months. And so I'm always bouncing around from stencils to freehand painting to cartoons to t-shirt design, logos design. I've done murals, and I like to work. I really enjoy what I do. So
that's good. I think there are not as many people as there should be that take pride and passion in their work, and like actually they wake up and they're like, man, I can't wait to get some stuff done and work and actually that. So that's always, always good to see and hear. Speaking of work, next question here. What are some of the projects, or some notable projects and stuff? Like, what are you kind of working on right now? Maybe big projects you've done in the past. We talked about the Pints and Pixels murals.
Well, I'm always looking for mural work. I mean, they're fantastic. I love getting those jobs when they come around. But again, I just do a lot of bouncing. So I'll do logos for people. I do the murals. I do quite a bit of commissions. I am working on a couple of commissions right now. One's a Saturn V piece, and one is a Dark Souls inspired piece. My big push at the moment is t-shirts. So I've really kind of got into this because I like designing stickers. When I was doing graffiti, a lot of it was done on homemade, hand-drawn, hand-painted stickers, and I would just churn them out by the hundreds sometimes. And I was, and so that was a ton of fun. And that's really what kind of got me into the professional art scene, was the idea that I wanted to do that. And I've been doing, and then I found conventions. And so I actually have ConK, which is the Doctor Who convention, ConCast of Boris, which is in the beginning of June. And then I will be at Hamacon for my third time this year. So I'll be there at the end of June for that.
There's actually a bunch of pieces that I've got. I need frames for them, but they're from Hamacon. I'm super excited to get a chance to put them
up. I'm stoked to be back. I missed it last year. They fill up quick, but I'm excited to be back again. So that's coming up. Those are the two big shows I'm prepping for at the moment. And then t-shirts. I've just done a new line of t-shirts and trying to get those off the ground and get those in front of people.
I've seen. And the one hanging in my closet. I was actually thinking this week, and kind of the lead up to this interview, is like, man, I got to go back over there. There's some really cool shirts I got to get there. But no, a lot of the stuff in your shop, and I know we're going to get to some of that stuff in a little bit. It's really, really cool. I mean, and I like, for me and my thought and what I understand about an artist, you always hear about the starving artist thing. I always like when I talk to artists and they're like, oh man, I've got this going on.
I mean, we are starving, but we're passionate and we're excited, and, it's a grind. I mean, I'm, like I said, I don't know if I mentioned, I'm doing a live painting. the night before I go to Conkay. So I do live paintings as well. And so again, there's always a show, always an event. And those are just so important to get in front of people. And I just try my best to be as many as I can and to be in front of people as often as I can.
That's what you got to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Show you stuff. You got to strut.
Exactly. Yeah.
You've talked most about this, but we'll ask the question just in case there's any other pieces there. The process, what is the process when you make your art? I know we talked about the spray can and the graffiti.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other tools or kind of tricks and stuff you use or have used in the past?
When you make a lot of paint pens. I've been actually doing, recently I've done a ton of collectibles, custom collectibles, which I'm having a blast doing. I've done two-dimensional painting for years and years. Mm-hmm. And so working on a 3D piece and like getting my hands on it is a blast. I remember being a little kid and I had my fort and it was literally just a platform off the ground. It kind of had walls, but they weren't really walls, but I would get wood and tarps and stuff and nail it all over it. And I had more fun working on it than I did playing in it. And so I was always modifying and I'd rip the roof off and change it for like an A-frame to like just a flat top roof and just change things. So with the collectibles, it's been a blast because I'm pretty frugal. Like I don't buy a lot of like, there's a choice couple of things that I buy as far as collectibles, but now I have a reason to buy them and I get to handle them and paint them and love them and appreciate them and then gift them or sell them to someone who's going to enjoy them even more. And so that has been a ton of fun.
I've seen a couple on your Facebook page and that Captain America one looks pretty dope.
Yeah, I actually just moved that a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I finished an Iron Man one and I've been all over those 12-inch Marvel Legends. They're fantastic. The sculpts are on all that stuff is fantastic. And those in particular have fantastic paint jobs, but a lot of the toys and stuff off the shelf, their sculpting is fantastic, but they're painted by machines and you can tell they're just poorly painted. They miss the edges. The coverage isn't good. Like, I mean, so going in,
they color outside the lines.
Yeah. Oh, it's outside the lines all over the place. And so going in and fixing all that stuff and doing repaints has been a blast. I'm really enjoying that. But as far as my process, I think it's always funny. I enjoy telling people this. My idea behind it is what can I do as fast as possible? And so like all of my artwork is done with the idea of how do I do this as quick as possible? Because again, coming from the graffiti background, it was when you're on a street corner at 2 a.m., like you got to do it quickly.
You got to get in and get out.
And I did that for a short amount of time. I actually got arrested for it. I spent 5 years felony probation for it. And so I didn't do it very long. But and again, I got started late. Like most kids do it when they're like 14 and they get a slap on the wrist. But I got a little bit more than that. But so with the idea of how do I do this as quickly as I possibly can, that's always been my mentality going into artwork in general. So it's actually really tough for me to do big elaborate projects because for that reason. Also ADD doesn't help, but
that's why you got to get it in. Gotta do quick.
Exactly. So like that was one of the reasons why the spray can really spoke to me is because I can lay down backgrounds and colors and things like that in minutes, and I let it dry for 24 hours, and then I come back to it with either the set of stencils that I've designed, or I plan to freehand paint over the top of it, and I use a lot of graphite, and I do sketching over the top of my background, and then I come in with the paints. I do use a lot of paint pens. I'm a really big fan of those, and I've been using a lot of brushes here recently, and so I'm really enjoying that too.
Okay. Very, very cool. I'm glad we got to at least start off learning a little bit more about float and Pete and kind of what you do and how you do it. Let's talk a little bit, shift gears just a little bit, and talk more just kind of your ideas and your thoughts just on artistry in and of itself. We talked. It was a big thing, and I think has to be a big thing for an artist is passion.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah.
What is driving you as an artist and doing what you're doing as float? Like, what is getting you out of the bed in the morning to go in the studio and say, I want to paint this? And, you know, you talk about the starving artist and, you know, you're not making millions of dollars. But we talk, again, that passion is so critical. Like, what is your passion? What is driving you to keep doing that?
Just again to create. Once I kind of found that I could spend my time physically creating something that wasn't there before, that's kind of what keeps me going. I just truly enjoy creating something new. I enjoy putting something out in the world that wasn't there before. I like being colorful. I like telling stories, and so that's really what kind of keeps me going with it. I think George Carlin said something like, gee, ain't I great? I mean, that's another big part of it too. Like, it's like being a kid and getting patted on the head. Like when I would go out at artist markets and stuff, I might not sell a thing, but you got a couple people who turn that corner and see my booth and go, wow. And I've had that reaction, and that's kind of what keeps me going. Like, I mean, the fact that people are enjoying what I'm doing and really appreciating it in any form or fashion, whether that's monetarily or just in spirit. And that's truly what keeps me going, is just knowing that people are enjoying what I'm doing and creating.
Yeah. I mean, and that's good. And that there are, especially as a creative, not necessarily just an artist, but as a creative, there's so much stuff that people jump into that creative work and they look for that get rich quick thing. Like, man, what can I do to get the most amount of money in the least amount of time? I want to jump in here and in like a month I want to make millions of dollars.
Right.
Reference Rocket Punch. Like, I want to get millions of views in like the first week here.
Sure.
And it's not, not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Both of us can speak from experience. It's not going to happen. And so to,
actually, I just ended up, I was working with Huntsville Steamworks for a while as a teacher, and I just finished a couple month or so ago teaching a street art class for kids, teenagers, and they had some art experience, and they were just like asking me questions. How do I sell things? How do I get in front of people? And I'm like, well, you just get in front of people. You worry about selling them later. Like, just get in front of people. That is so important. You're not going to make thousands of dollars. I think you wanted to save up for a car or something. And I had to be like, hey, man, I didn't want to discourage you, but I'm not going to send you out there thinking you're going to make $1,000 on Saturday at the artist market. Like, I mean, it's just, you do it for the passion. You do it for the drive.
And what I think what a lot of people don't realize sometimes is that if you put the passion in, it will show.
Oh, it does, yeah.
And the people will notice your work.
Yeah.
Like, just necessarily, like, I just want to do this and get my money and get out. They, kind of what some people call, quote-unquote, fake.
Sure.
People pick up on that. The populace picks up on that. But when you're genuine and you're like, man, I really, really love painting.
I mean, it takes building an audience, building a following, and building clientele and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I tell people I'm so grateful to be doing what I'm doing in Huntsville because it's the size of the city, and like I can be known here, and like, and I really truly enjoy that, and I reap the benefits of like the relationships that I've built and the confidence people have in me and then put in me and the trust they give me and like the work that I do for them, and so and I see the benefits of that, but it, I mean, I'm 5 years in, like, I mean, I'm just still getting started, and like it's work. I mean, it's definitely work for sure. Yep.
You can't take your foot off the gas.
No, not at all.
We talked about graffiti, and for this particular question, are there any other big influences in your work, or what are some of the biggest influences in what you do? Is there maybe specific graffiti or graffiti artists that you like and kind of help you create your style? Or anybody that comes to mind, or anyone, anything?
The Simpsons. I mean, like I mentioned them a minute ago. Like, that was... It's still some, like, the Berenstain Bears. I don't know. Like, that was a collage top table I did where I took a bunch of old Berenstain Bears books and cut them up. And, like, just looking back through those pages, realizing how much things like that influenced me as a kid. Like, the style of the drawings. Calvin and Hobbes, that would be another one. Like, just...
The kids know Calvin and Hobbes. I don't know if they know Berenstain Bears. Yeah, they're not that cool.
But, yeah, I mean, like... The Animaniacs and Pinky the Brain and all that kind of, all the old Cartoon Network stuff and Dexter's Lab. And I'm a huge fan of that kind of artwork. And that's the stuff that, again, was influencing me as a kid that I didn't even quite pick up on until I kind of years and years later, I'm like, oh, that's why I like it so much. I go back and watch one of those cartoons or read one of those books and kind of see the genesis of it. Like, even now, That stuff is still kind of like driving what I'm doing.
Yeah, and that's cool. Like, especially we're old enough, we would consider that age like the golden age of cartoons.
Yeah,
you around watch Dexter's Lab and Johnny Bravo and Cow and Chicken and Courage the Cowardly Dog. And so you must be a big fan of the Thundercats.
Oh yeah, that too. Okay. Yeah,
I've got we've got a member of the Rock Punch crew who you should talk to. Chris is. Well, we have to have the conversation.
Cool.
You might have to talk to him about that. So, next question I've got for you, Pete, here. As a creative, for listeners who don't know and do not know our area, Rocket Punch and where we're at, we're in Huntsville, Alabama. That's, if you look at the United States,
North
you look
Alabama.
At Alabama, yeah, it is North Alabama. And Huntsville in and of itself is always joke around and tell people when they think about like, you know, I'm living in Alabama, mm-hmm. but hold on a second. I live in Huntsville. Exactly. This is I know you put a thought in your head about Alabama, but Huntsville's really different.
It's not the same as the rest of Alabama. I call it a bubble city. I mean, it's its own thing of Alabama, and it stands outside of it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it, one of the big reasons Huntsville is very tech heavy. There are a lot of engineers. I know the big thing that keeps being thrown around on the media is like we have the highest PhDs. Per capita. In the country.
Which I don't have, by the way.
I'm right there with you, dude. And we have a lot of engineers, mm-hmm. we have a lot of techs.
Yeah, there's a lot of research done. There's the arsenal where a lot of research and military technology.
Space and Rocket Center, NASA.
All that.
So, next question I've got for you, as a creative, because when you think of engineers and these tech heavy people, usually you have, they're very logical, everything's got to be perfect. Yeah. Everything's got to stay inside the line. I got a 90 degree angle on all this stuff here. How has it been in regards to your work, understanding that tech demographic and kind of, if you do it at all, incorporate some of that in what you do to try and get them to say, hey, look at what I'm bringing to the table. Do you have to really do anything with that? Or?
Not as much as you might think. I definitely don't kind of gear my artwork toward that. It's all about, I got good advice years ago because I was trying to, like, especially with the pop culture pieces and the conventions and comic book conventions. We actually have 5 here in Huntsville, which is fantastic. And I work all of them as an artist, and they're phenomenal people that run all those shows. And you're always trying to hit the mark as far as like what movie's coming out, what's popular, what's going to do well this weekend, or what people are into.
Struggle.
And it's impossible. Like I've come to find out there's no accounting for taste. Like when people walk through the door, you never know who you're going to run into. So I got good advice a long time ago, a couple years ago, from another artist, like do what is exciting to you because you're going to do your best work on that. And so I don't try to like hit the mark as far as the Huntsville scene so much, or the art, the engineering scene, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just do what comes to me and do what I really truly enjoy. And that doesn't mean that I don't do Huntsville pieces. I did a really cool rocket Saturn V piece that I'm excited about. I'm actually working on a totally separate one as a commission at the moment. And so I really enjoy that stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been lucky. I mean, you always have rough clients or people who are very sticky about details and things like that. Those happen from time to time, but I've been really lucky that a lot of people give me a lot of freedom. When they come to an artist, they kind of know the deal. I'm commissioning a piece. I want it in your style. I want your aesthetics. I want your choices. And they trust me to do that. And I've also built up a body of work where you can go back and see the kind of stuff that I do. I mean, it's definitely not a mystery, my styles and aesthetics and choices and things like that. So when people come to me, for the most part, they're very forgiving. They're very open. They're very accepting of what I'm producing. So it doesn't come up as often as you might think. And I'm really lucky, knock on wood. I mean, you always have rough clients and they're just demanding and very specific wants and needs and things like that that you have to take care of. And again, I think it's about building a personality, building your reputation. And I've been lucky enough to been able to build a good reputation here in town.
Yeah. Those are good words of wisdom. There's kind of not only just as artists, but as creatives, so much want to start going down the road of like, oh, well, this demographic seems to like this. So maybe if I steer my stuff kind of towards this or that, and instead really sticking to your guns and saying like, this is what I'm going to do, and come look at it and understanding that you're not going to grab everybody, and you are going to have those people that are very particular. And, you know, in Huntsville, my thoughts, a very fair amount of people that are particular, which isn't wrong. It's not bad at all.
Sure.
You just want what you want. But I think people see that and you have that style there, because I know that.
Yeah, it's been not compromising what you want to do and how you want to create it. A good example of that is Alabama football. Like I could care less about football. I always tell people when they ask, I did a R2-D2 and TARDIS mashup, and it's actually on top of a Alabama championship plaque. I sanded that right off used the plaque and did an R2-D2 TARDIS mashup on top of it. And so not into football, but the reason I brought it up is to say that if someone asks me, specifically comes and asks me for that, that's fine. I'll do a commission, no problem. But I'm not going to turn around and start doing Alabama football because it's going to sell in my shop.
I'm not
going to
see those big paintings of like
never would
the running back running the end zone.
No, I wouldn't even know who the running back was. Like, no, not my thing. But
I kind of want to see that in your art style now. Just how weird would that look?
I mean, I'm a hockey fan, but I don't even follow that really well. But
For people who don't know, if you ever come into Alabama or live here, that's like
Roll Tide is the thing they say.
Usually you get a questionnaire, and the first question is Roll Tide or War Eagle. You have to circle one.
The Tigers.
Yeah. Auburn. You got to do one of them. There. So. Next question I've got for you, Pete. How has working as a creative and doing your art in 2018 now, how has it differed now than it was kind of for you in the past? Even, you know, when you first started, or maybe kind of your earlier days, like, has anything you've seen particularly gotten better, gotten worse, kind of in... Not only just with you specifically, but in the artist landscape as a whole.
I mean, I would definitely say it's gotten better. I mean, people, I think, appreciate locally done stuff. I think they appreciate independent artists a lot more. I think there's been a big shift towards independent everything.
I'd agree. Definitely agree with that.
From people not wanting to be a part, they want to be contracted by big companies. They don't want to work for big companies anymore. And so that aesthetic goes into art as well. Like most, I think probably a lot more than you think, art that you see, commercial art, I mean, in like Target or Kohl's or anywhere you might buy stuff like that, is done by independent artists who are doing it freelance for companies. And I think that's been a huge shift and is still happening. And so with stuff that I do, I think there's a bigger appreciation for it because of that, because it's, I would say I'm small scale at the moment, but, I'm moving towards something, but they appreciate that kind of aesthetic. And again, just having independent freelance artists doing their thing, and the internet's obviously just exploded that because everyone can get their voice out there. And so, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the things coming out of, I mean, my Instagram feed is full of my, what are they called? Contemporary artists, and contemporaries that I look up to and check out. And so that's really, really cool. And I'm just a huge, I think it's fantastic. I think it's helped a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. The internet has been a huge boon for artists, and not even just artists, but like content creators pointing fingers at Rocket Punch like in kind of what we're able to do. I mean, I have a podcast episode where I recorded it here in my office, and the other person was 5 hours away. And we went to a web page, not even just Skype, web page. It recorded the audio and dumped it in, and we had it. And so that, and you look at that, and from the big to the small, kind of how technology has improved our, not only lives, but our jobs and stuff like that the whole time. I mean, you think about, from an artist standpoint, back when, and tell me if I'm off the base here, I know about artists, but only so much. Enough to be dangerous. You know, you go back to where, you know, Bob Ross era, and you got the little, what were the easel?
Easel and paintbrush.
And paintbrush, and you got to paint on that. And now we've got people that you have this Wacom tablet that you just have a pen, and you can draw some of the craziest stuff, even more so than back then, on your computer.
I mean, that's definitely something that I've had to pick up. I traditionally work by hand. Just about everything I do is done by hand, with a couple of exceptions. I mean, I design stencils on the computer because you can use Photoshop and layers and things like that. But I've slowly had to incorporate computer skills into what I do more and more. For example, I do logos for people, and you have to have the right file types and things like that, and do them in vectors, and they may need to be able to blow them up to whatever size they want or shrink them, and that's all done in vector. And I didn't know what a vector was 5 years ago, like, but I do now, and I'm getting better and better at it. So I've had to incorporate all those computer skills into what I do, and I find myself more and more on the computer, but I still do, I'd say, 75% or more of my art by hand. That's just what I enjoy doing. I like I'm more of a contact sport than you might think. I mean, I'm on my feet a lot. I do a lot of stenciling. I do a lot of spray painting. Even the brush stuff, like, is done, like, standing at my table sometimes. And mm-hmm. I'm on my feet more often than you might think in my workshop.
Almost piggybacking off this question, you talked about kind of, I think it's one of the big shifts as an artist is moving from that analog to that digital side.
Sure.
Do you think that in the artist community as a whole, your opinion that people are starting to lose that analog ability? People talk about how, like, if we're getting to a point where it's so digital that people may forget about the analog. It's
one of those things that is cyclical. It goes around in cycles, and people, I think maybe even 10 years, I mean, again, my armchair opinion, like 10 years ago, I think people were enamored with digital art in general, and so I think it exploded, but I think that we'll definitely, and I could see some turning back to the more analog. I mean, you see things like claymation coming in movies again. Like, you think that would have died out. Like, why would you still make movies with puppets and things like that? But there's still people out there who know how to do it, and they're still making motion pictures, like big
Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah. And then what was the one with the dogs? There was one with the dogs just recently.
Yeah, like, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, I haven't either. But just the idea that it's happening. Like, so those skills don't die out. And they definitely are still appreciated by people. And again, like, with the technology, it's just new and fresh. And so that's the big thing. And I don't think that's going away anytime soon. But I do just think people appreciate like a paintbrush.
Ooh, look at the shiny new toy.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I think that it's that appreciation, like, we enjoy what's a good example of those cartoons that we watched back in the day, and then we get older and stuff evolves, and then kind of we long for that nostalgia sometimes to kind of see what, oh man, kids, you don't even know about when we were watching back then.
Just the fact that I get mural jobs and still, like, people want me to come paint on their walls. Why not print it in vinyl and die cut it and slap it up there like a sticker? You could print just anything that I could ever paint, and it would be even more perfect. Unfortunately, like, that's just the power of a computer, is that precision you just can't get with a paintbrush, no matter how good you are. And so, but the fact that people still want things painted on their walls is amazing to me, and I don't think that's ever going to go away, because there's a quality in a hand-done piece that's just not there in a digital piece. You're not going to have those little imperfections, those little happy mistakes and happy little trees. I mean, like, that's what comes with a physical painting that you just can't get with a digital piece.
That's true. I'm a big tech guy. You can ask my wife, ask my family. You can look in my room, this is my office. Yeah, a bunch of crazy. Peter's looking around like, man, there's a lot of stuff in here. But even then, I still have the mindset, and it may just be kind of just how I was raised, that you never want to let that old stuff and how old things were done kind of, don't forget those. Oh, always absolutely. Remember, though, there are lessons to learn from those, and you never know. Like, perfect example, even music, like records.
Oh, yeah.
LPs are kind of making a comeback.
I mean, I don't know it, but people swear those are better than CDs. Like, I can't hear it, but I've got bad ears.
You have to weigh what they mean by better. but it's just really cool. Like, I've thought about getting a record player from the store and kind of hooking that up in here, just because that feel, because I never got to feel that. My dad has one in his house, and he's like, oh, I've got all these records. I'm like, man, you know, are we going to sit there and go back to... I do have some VHSs. I just have them, like, I want to show my kids in the future. Like, this is what we used to watch on, kids.
Oh, I know. My little boy knows nothing about it.
You had to rewind manually. Hit the button.
I was just talking. I had some cousins over. They're 11 and 13. And I was like, we were talking about staying up late. I let them stay up late, and I was showing some painting stuff, and they were up to like 1 in summer vacation. They're loving it. And I was like, yeah, man, when I was your age, I used to stay up like reading. I had this like comic book series, and I had these little like blah, blah, blah. And they were like, reading? And I was like, yeah, because I didn't have a phone. I didn't even get a Game Boy until I was like 15. And it was black and white. You don't even know. Like,
don't know the struggle.
You don't know the struggle.
Were you saying this on your porch with your cane?
I might as well have been. Oh, okay. I was yelling at them. They were in the back seat. I was driving around. I think I took them over to Pints and Pixels, and they loved it. Yeah. Actually, I don't think they loved it. I don't think they got it. They never really played an arcade game like that. So even that was just, 11 and 13-year-old boy, like, they just kind of, like, had this glassy look in their eye, like, I don't know what to do or how to play these games. And I'm like, yeah, because they're hard. That's right. They're way harder than anything you ever had to play.
There's no easy mode on these games, kids.
But no, we had a good time. I love Pints and Pixels.
Good. Oh, I love them too. They know when they're listening. They know. So, you've been an artist for a while, a couple years at least. Yeah. What, in your time being an artist, what has been the most surprising thing that you've discovered and kind of run into as being an artist? Something kind of shocking that you were kind of like, wow, that, I didn't expect that.
Man, the networking aspect of it, maybe. That's something that I didn't quite see coming, and I also didn't understand how much I would enjoy it. I'm actually really shy natured. I keep to myself. I'm a homebody. Like, I'm, if you would find me on a Saturday night at my workshop painting by myself with some old movie on the TV, like, and so, but doing this job has really kind of forced me out of my shell in a way I didn't expect. And I've enjoyed it more than I ever expected. Years ago, I actually thought I was going to try to do film. Me and a buddy actually shot a short film and produced it together, and just out of college. And this is actually right before I left college. And I, for a short time, I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I actually really enjoyed it, and I had a blast doing it and would have been really good at it, except I realized really quickly that freelancing aspect of it, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to have to work for the next job. I didn't want to have to call people to, like, find work. I didn't want to have to keep up with scores of contacts all over the place and, like, do all this traveling. And that really kind of scared me. And so working as an artist really kind of forced me into that role. I have to do that. I do traveling. I go out of state for shows. I constantly have to find shows and find work and get in front of people and set up events and set up with clients and be in front of people on a very regular basis. And I've really surprised at how much I've kind of grown into it and enjoyed it. So that would be one of the biggest shocks as far as being an artist.
Because
I want to paint. I want to sit and paint by myself in my shop.
But all of a sudden, there's nothing wrong with that.
No. But, like, all of a sudden, I found myself just out in the world and kind of, like, on this island. And, I kind of really enjoyed it. I really do enjoy it.
I remember when we started Rocket Punch, one of the things that was like nails on a chalkboard for me was talking into a microphone and actually having to hear my own voice. Yeah. And I don't know why. It's a weird quirk for now. But now, kind of similar thing, as I got used and kind of broke out of that shell, it just doesn't even bother me anymore. Okay, I listened to I listened to my own podcast. I'm like, man, I sounded really good there. Maybe used a little too many words there. Man, the voice was off a little bit there. Why was that? So it's really cool.
Well, we're all our worst critics. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, especially being as artists, that's, you've got to deal with the mistakes as well as, like, the successes, and, like, learn from them and get better and stop focusing so much on the mistakes, because they will freeze you up and stop you from doing anything more if you let them. That's true. And so you've definitely got to, like, take those things in stride.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. All right. Now we got to shift into third.
Sure.
We've talked about your artistry and just kind of your thoughts on being an artist kind of nowadays here. But one of the interesting things I know from you is that you are an artist, but you have to, it's a business. You have to make money and you have to run that. So let's talk about, haven't really had it. I might actually get insight from these questions here, because that's one of the things I know that we at Rocket Punch strive to do, is kind of get to that point where maybe this could be a full-time job for us.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be great. But from your perspective, how has it been running a small business like yours in 2018? I'm sure that there have been a lot of inventions that have made it a lot easier, like Square card readers and all that other crazy stuff.
PayPal reader, I mean, being able to do your taxes online, that's a big deal. I mean, it's no joke hard. I mean, I've been doing this 5 years now. I've had my business license for 4 of those. And this is something that I didn't, that would be another shock to the system. Like, figuring out that I needed to figure out how to do my taxes and to maintain a business. How do I maintain inventory systems? I maintain an inventory system for a number of the different types of pieces that I do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see that coming either. And I mean, I'm a business owner of one. I mean, I'm the only employee. And so having to do, again, marketing, advertising, paying for those things, managing inventory, finding shows, finding work, and then actually producing work on top of that. I mean, I do like a couple of full-time jobs to keep it all running, and it gets easier because you learn little tricks and you learn what can slide and what can't, and how to juggle it all and go back and forth. But it's definitely it's a hustle. I mean, I hustle for what I do, and like got to keep the energy up and got to keep moving and got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, it's and especially in Huntsville, there's been so many. I mean, I can talk about the food truck scene alone here.
Yeah,
as far as like kind of running a small business and some of the successes I've seen, but I think while technology has helped out a lot, it's still, I think some people make it fold and not understanding that it's still hard. There's still a lot of work you have to do to maintain your business and make sure that, you know, you want people to see your stuff, but also at the end of the day, you have to eat food and sleep under a roof.
Yeah. And I mean, like even just, unfortunately I wasn't able to participate in it, but at Low Mill, they did an artist, what would you call it? Like a tutorial kind of like how to get started as a professional artist. How do you get in front of people? How do you find shows? I mean, pricing was a huge question, a huge topic. And how do you price your stuff? How do you figure out what it's worth? How do you figure out what people will pay? Unfortunately, like you can get all the advice, but trial and error is a big part of that. What you throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And there's just lots of little things that you definitely don't think about. Again, how do you set up in a show? How do you break down? How do you pack all your stuff away? I mean, that is a huge puzzle in unto itself. For about the first 3 years, I think my setup at an event was different every single time. I was constantly rearranging stuff and like making new signage. And I personally am I'm a big fan of farming stuff out. Like, I mean, I had a good friend of mine working with me when I got started to do my prints. So like mm-hmm. I said, I do just about everything by hand. And so the computer stuff was a mystery to me. And I didn't know a lot about doing graphic design and like traditional computer graphic design. And so I had a good friend of mine working with me to produce my prints that I was making, prints mm-hmm. of my artwork. She also made me price tags, which was awesome. Like these little modular price tags that I could magnetize to my stand. And so I farm stuff like that out. I make pins and buttons and shirts and things like that. But generally, I'm not physically producing those things. I'm designing for them and then having them produce for me. And stuff like that is fantastic because it's almost like having an employee for the first time. Like, you guys, work is getting done and I'm not the one doing it. Like, it's amazing. I say what I need and it shows up in a couple weeks. Like, that's absolutely incredible. So I'm a big fan of farming stuff out. And it's wonderful because a lot of times the people I'm doing that and working with and collaborating with are other local business owners and other local artists that. So to be able to support them as well as support myself, like, that's fantastic. I'm currently working with another artist to do some graphic design work for me as far as like just signage around my shop. Something that is not necessarily a strength of mine, but it is one of hers. Jessica Nuno's another local artist that's doing that for me. Another good friend of mine, Ari Locks, is a designer, engineer, woodworker. He's recently purchased a laser cutter and is doing a lot of laser cut work for me, which is fantastic. I'm also working with another guy, new friend of mine, Logan, who's a 3D printer, who's producing 3D prints that then I can turn around and paint. And so, like, I love having this network of people to help me and work with me. And so that's been, anytime I can find someone to help me keep my business going is fantastic. And again, these are local artists, local people, that being able to support them as well is super rewarding.
Yeah. And being a small business in 2018, I think it really has its advantages. It has its negatives as well, but I think the big advantage in 2018, you have all these tools, again, technology, all these stuff you have access to that make things easier, connect to more people. You see it, I think, in every space, not only just in the artist space, but indies and indie game development for video games.
And that's the beauty of the internet too, is it's giving everybody a voice, and not just that they have their voice, it's that their audience can find them. I mean, like, look at YouTube. Like, I'm Oxhorn is a guy that does Fallout videos, and that's a big, I'm a Fallout fan, but like I've recently gotten really into it, and he does these lore videos, and he's making a career. I mean, he's supporting himself doing 30-minute lore videos where he's wandering through vaults in Fallout, and they're fantastic. They're well done, well executed, and it's fantastic to know that he's found his audience, and that's really cool. Like, that goes back to the indie art scene, and like, all this stuff is getting produced, and it's not just sitting in someone's house. It's actually getting in front of people, and people are hungry for it and actively searching for it, which is very, very cool.
So you must be really pumped for Fallout 76.
Yeah, man, I just saw that video just the other day. Like, I've been into it, like I said, recently. I actually just got a Vive, so I've been playing it on VR, which is really, really cool. And again, I've got my wife into it too, and so she's just discovering video games in general. Like, over the last about 2 years, she played Skyrim and just absolutely fell in love, and then she's like, what else can I play? And I'm like, you're playing the gold standard. There's nothing better than this. I can't recommend anything that's going to top this. And but recently, like, she's really big Fallout, so we were like oogling over the 76 Fallout 76 video just
yesterday. We'll find out about that soon. I'm definitely
talking about small businesses, I'm lucky to work with a lot of small businesses too, which is really fantastic. A lot of the murals I end up doing are for small business owners, local business owners who are looking to, I mean, that's an investment. Like, what do I do? When they get a mural on the wall, like, that's an investment in what they do. And I love being there. Like, I've been really lucky to be with small business owners who are literally opening their doors a week after I finish a mural. And so that's super cool. I mean, I'm in there when construction's going on. I get to be a fly on the wall while decisions are getting made, and like, all this really cool positive energy is going on, and it's just really, really cool to be a part of.
Got to see the behind the scenes.
Exactly. Really cool. Like, I mean, I got to be in Pints of Pixels weeks and months before it even opened, like working on the mural there. And then I got to Donald Walker, I believe is his last name. He did the really large one by the pinball machines, and like, getting to know him. And Christina Wegman did the other mural toward the back with the smaller pinball players. And just being a part of that energy and seeing all that stuff, all this work and hard work going into something like that, and then watching it pay off from a distance, like, just again, being that fly on the wall for that is just fantastic. And I love being a part of it.
That's cool. We've talked about small businesses kind of throughout the question so far, just kind of how intimate that can be, and kind of how that's definitely with technology and nowadays kind of being that big boon where everybody kind of wants to see something different. So that's cool. We could talk about it now. You recently have been set up in the Low Mill Arts and Entertainment building.
Yeah.
For people who are listening that are in the area and do not know what that is, you can help me describe it. It's basically a big place kind of for creatives. I don't want to say absolutely. It's a artists.
It was a cotton mill, I think, for like 150 years. I mean, it's an old building, and they have converted it into artist studios. So they basically, what used to be a factory floor has now been sliced up and divided into hundreds of artist studios. They're like all rented
three
by
three floors. Oh, it's
yeah,
so great.
Three
it's
floors
so great.
Tall. I've been told it's actually the most artists under one roof in the country. Wow. It's right here. And it's Low Mill. I mean, it's a local landmark. If you say Low Mill around Huntsville, everybody knows what you're talking about. Yep. And so I've been lucky enough to open up a studio there just recently in February. And with the Flying Monkey. So the second floor is actually run by another artist community called the Flying Monkey, the Flying Monkeys. And so we take over that part of the second floor. And so that's where my studio is, the second floor, Low Mill.
So I know you've been set up there recently. How has that been, kind of setting yourself up in Low Mill, and how was that process? Was it crazy? Was it easy?
Easy as far as like, no. Well, what I mean by that is like, I mean, you're physically moving all your stuff in there and making all these decisions, and it's a storefront as well as my actual working studio where I do work there, and. Like I said, it's a local landmark. So for years now, I've done all these local conventions and been in front of a lot of people at different artist markets and things like that. And people ask me repeatedly, I can find you at Low Mill, right? You're an artist. You must be at Low Mill. And for years, I've had to say no. And so to be able to finally say, yes, absolutely. Studio 261, second floor, Flying Monkey, like, absolutely, I'm right there. Like, that's been phenomenal. It's just a huge boost of confidence. It's a huge boost of like notoriety, and like, I really, really enjoy being there. And yeah, I say no, not easy, but I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's fun work. Like, again, that's just maintaining a storefront, and I've been in a lot of gallery situations where I've had work for sale, and different local places around town, and I've been, you're at the whim of someone else. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. your storefront, it's their storefront, and you're just visiting. And so to be able to say, like, I have my own store and I maintain it and it's mine, I get to make all the decisions, that's really, really cool. Yeah. And just to have a brick and mortar for the first time, been doing this for 5 years essentially from my garage or my workshop at home. And so to be able to say, like, I have an actual store, you can find me, these are my hours, I'll be there. That's phenomenal.
Yep. And that's really cool. And I think that Low Mill is one of the great things about Huntsville.
Just agree.
All those artists under that one roof. I mean, I know I've been there on Saturdays and it is crazy how busy that is.
It's a ton of fun. Like, and just the energy in there. And again, like all the personalities, and every artist coming at it from a different angle. And I've got a ton of friends there, and I consider them coworkers. I mean, we all work together. We're all there to help each other. And, just having that community of people around me, like, is hugely satisfying and just enriching for what we do. And so we're all in it together.
And even speaking on Low Mill, because I really don't know much about Low Mill, and kind of from their standpoint, do they work really hard to help boost everyone there as far as providing, not necessarily boost, but like provide support for you guys in your different spaces? Or is it more just like, hey, here's your storefront and we tell people to come to Low Mill? Or
it is. I mean, they do events there and things like that. They do free music for the concert on the docks. They do that in the fall, spring into fall, or spring into summer, I mean. And they do other, like, Good Day is one for the kids festival. They used to do Pi Day. They do other things like that. So there's definitely events, and there's also the Huntsville Comic Con is there now, which That's is right, yep. 2 years running. This will be, 2 years.
It's 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely things like that going on, which is always a good thing. I mean, anytime you bring people in the doors, yeah. But generally, this is your studio. It's yours to run. It's your business. I don't know for sure, but I imagine everybody in there has their own business license, and they do this professionally, and it's on them to kind of maintain and keep their own businesses and doors open.
Like the same we talked about earlier, contract work. Like you're being leased in contract.
Exactly. I mean, we all rent those spaces, and we're all independent.
Okay. That's very, very cool. Yeah, if you're local and you have not checked out Low Mill Arts and Entertainment Building, definitely go by and check it out. I think it's right off Governor's Drive. It's not far from it. Yeah. So.
They're open Wednesday through Saturday.
Yeah.
With the 12 to 6, I think, most days.
So there you go. You're not doing anything this weekend. Go check it out. Next question I have for you. How have you improved? How do you think? I don't think. What are your thoughts? How have you improved from a business, and even just as well, and we talked about artistic, but you can add anything else artistic you want to add in, but more so from a business standpoint, from when you started to now, have you know, those lessons that you've learned, we talked about on the artistic side, have there been any on the business side that...
I mean, sure. I mean, you just, it gets easier and it gets streamlined, but when you first start doing this or doing any business, really, there's just, you don't know what you don't know. And like, you don't know it till you find it out. And that's usually when there's a problem. And so you've got these kind of like different things crop up. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. How do I get into a show? How do I apply for a show? You just don't know how to do that. Who do I talk to? When is the application process start? Does it start in April when the show's in November? Like, you've got to know when those things are coming around, keep up with them, keep on top of them. So just, I think confidence is definitely what I've improved at. It's not being thrown by problems as they come up as easy. Something mm-hmm. that might have like thrown me a curveball that I may have sat on for 2 weeks, and that would have like prevented me from signing up for a show because I didn't know that I needed an artist bio, or I didn't know that I needed a biopic or a picture, or not knowing what photo to send in, or like not knowing that there's an application fee, or not knowing that there's what the booth rentals are. So just the amount of knowledge you pick up along the way just gives you that confidence to kind of tackle any other challenges.
Okay. I figure as much, like, when you, from where you started to where you are, definitely some lessons you have to learn there. And as we've continued to drive home, it's not, don't, you know, there are tools that make it easier, but it is not
sure.
easy.
No, definitely not. That's but I mean, business. Yeah, email just makes it super easy. You can talk to anybody anytime, like shoot them an email and just talk it through, or PayPal. I mean, I do PayPal. I do all my invoicing on PayPal, mm-hmm. Which is a huge help. And yeah, but I'm actually still a huge fan of pen and paper. I actually do most of my tax stuff on pen and paper. I don't use like Excel, which drives my wife crazy. She's like an Excel master, quite literally. Is like she has taught like Excel master classes for her job.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's serious. She knows it.
I mean, you'd be surprised.
I'm gonna have to show her the Excel artwork that you're. I'm gonna have to find that and show it to her. I saw her one day. Resizing a photo in Microsoft Word, like of all programs to like have to resize a photo in, that was her go-to. And I tell people that all the time because I think it's the funniest thing in the world. But but no, actually, and it drives her crazy too because I do everything in pen and paper. Like I keep a notebook and I track all my receipts and things like that in pen and paper. And she's actually made me a couple of Excel spreadsheets like that I can print out so I can actually like draw in the lines and use the cells and things like that. But I do a lot of pen and paper.
Just tell her that, look at her and tell her, hey, sometimes the old ways are the best, and just walk away from that.
I mean, like even the calendar, we were talking about this before we got started today, but like I use a Google Calendar now, but for two or three years now for my my year end, my actual schedule of events and things like that and everything I keep track of, I have a year long calendar that's posted up on the wall in my shop. And I've got a pen like tacked to the wall next to it on a string and I write in it and keep track of it that way.
There you go. When it's right in front of you, it's easy.
Oh, it's easy. Yeah, it's all, you don't have to scroll up and down. It's all in one. I can see it in one glance. I love it.
Oh, yeah. So, you're in Low Mill now. You got your storefront that you want. From that business standpoint again, what are some of the ideas that you've had to kind of work and continue to grow your customer base, especially as an artist? Like, is there anything, it doesn't have to be general, like anything unique that you do to kind of draw people in?
One cool thing, not as often as I should, is the answer to that. Like, I'm looking into some advertising outlets and things like that. I've got a couple of leads on some local stuff and how to get some advertising space, and that is on my mind. But one cool thing I did do when Pokemon Go was super big, and this again comes from the graffiti background. Let me talk about Free Art Friday. This is kind of neat. When I was in Atlanta living there, I got involved with a group of people that were doing like art scavenger hunts. And the idea was Free Art Friday. They would produce these very small, you'd spend maybe 20 minutes or so just kind of creating something really interesting and small. And you would go out into the city and place it down somewhere and then tweet or like Instagram the location, and then people would come find it. And so like it was FAF, Free Art Friday, ATL. It was neat. I mean, there was about 50 rotating artists that would do it. And they would do it on such a regular basis that you would just be walking down the street and bump into something sitting there. And you'd be like, I know who did that. I recognize the art. I know exactly who did it. And they probably put that down maybe 10 minutes before you walked by. Wow. And so it was that prolific where it was everywhere. And it was really, really exciting to be involved in it. And again, coming from the graffiti background at that point, I had been arrested. And so I wasn't doing illegal graffiti anymore. And I really got excited about this free art stuff. And so I was doing that a lot before I left Atlanta. And I've attempted a couple times. I've done it a couple times here in Huntsville on a small scale, put out some pieces and done a little bit of scavenger hunt type of stuff. So when Pokemon Go was big, I had done a couple of Pokeball paintings, and I produced a bunch of pins. And so I produced, actually did a small Kickstarter to get these off the ground and produced a few hundred Pokeball pins of like the Pokeball, Master Ball, Great Ball, Ultra Ball. Mm-hmm. And they're real small. I forget if they're an inch or they're an inch point, 1.25 inches, pins that you would put on your shirt. And I attached them to a card that kind of looked like the Pokemon screen from Pokemon Go, like that I designed up and kind of modified, and then had all my information on the back. And I went around the park and just put them down on the ground, all over the place. I did it with a number of Mario Brothers pins I made as well, and I would just hide them in bushes and hide them on street ledges, the corner street ledge, and on the stairs at Big Screen Park, and I just kind of went around where I knew people were playing and would just put them down on the ground.
I remember this very much.
And that was a ton of fun, because it's reward. It's fun because it was kind of back to my roots of like being able to produce art and then put it out there and not take credit for it. But also, like, I did have my business information on the back, so it wasn't as anonymous as like a graffiti piece was, but it was in that same vein, and I kind of really got excited about that. So that was a marketing thing.
That's a really cool and unique way of kind of showcasing your business, is doing something like that, and get that's a culmination of everything you want. You've got this popular game, everybody's playing it. Exactly. You've got a way you can easily, in a very unique and standoutish way, to draw people in. I remember that. I remember, I think, walking in the park the few times I was out there playing, seeing that in there. I mean, the new Pokemon game got shown off. You might have to do something like that again.
I've still got quite a few of those pens left. Like I mean, that's definitely on my mind. And again, I don't do it as much as I should, but it's definitely fresh on my mind. I've maybe give myself more leeway than I should. I've been in my studio now for 5 months, and I still don't feel like I've truly announced it to the world. I kind of, and that's somewhat because I'm shy, and I don't like being in spotlight, but it's also because I feel like I'm giving myself a little bit of breathing room and like really kind of find my legs and get my legs underneath me, and again, make sure I have an inventory, and just kind of like, I'm still getting the shop up where I want it, and so I'm spending a lot of time on things like that.
You want to scale up. You don't want to just open the floodgates right off the bat. You kind of open up a little by little.
Yeah, that's kind of my mentality and kind of how I do things. But yeah, that was a really fun little marketing idea that I came up with, and I just had a blast doing it. It was a culmination of like all these different ideas bouncing around in my head. Like, how do I do this? How do I get in front of people? What do I know? Okay, put stuff out for free and like go and find people in a way and interact with them in a way that's not traditional. Yeah. And so that was a ton of fun.
Very, very cool. Very cool. All right. Prepare yourself, everyone. This is the big question we ask everybody. But I think it's a really, really important question, and kind of one of the reasons we do Creator Spotlight here at Rocket Punch. You're an artist.
Yeah.
I would consider you a very successful artist. You're in the freaking Louvre. And like, oh, look at my pieces. But I'm sure there are people that are listening. I see this interview, and they listen in, like, you know, they've got that graffiti can in their hand, too. Like, oh, man, what can I do? What advice would you give to those people listening that want to kind of start their own project, their own creative project, geek project, whatever? Like, what's maybe like pieces of advice, one piece or piece, whatever you want to give to kind of help motivate them or kind of help them start their own stuff?
I would definitely say practice. Just get out and do it. I mean, if you've got a paintbrush in your hand, and you're waiting to do some artwork or something, start doing artwork. I mean, paper is cheap. I mean, that's one of the things I kept trying to drill into the heads of. I said I did a street art class recently where I was teaching a handful of really awesome teenagers, and paper is cheap. Go out and do it. I mean, destroy that paper over and over and over again. Get the pencil moving. Get working on any of those projects. You're going to make mistakes along the way, but each one of those is a lesson on what not to do. And just produce whatever your goal is. Keep going toward it.
It's good stuff, good lessons to do, because I mean, when you stop practicing,
you will never make your goal. That's for sure. I mean, the moment you say I'm done or this isn't working, then you will never achieve that goal. So you've got to keep pushing at it. I mean, if you're an artist looking to get started, I mean, draw what you like. I tell people all the time, you don't have to be a master of every bit of artwork, every style of artwork. You need to be a master of yours. And the only way you figure that out is by doing what you enjoy doing. If you like drawing horses, draw horses. If you like doing cartoons, draw cartoons. If you like doing realism, do that. Don't feel like you have to do everything under the sun. We specialize. Like, I mean, my hat goes off to like all tattoo artists. Like, there's some people who have to do everything. They have to do lettering. They have to do cartoons. They have to do realism. They have to do this. And like, they do, and they're amazing at it. But most artists don't do that. They're very specialized, very specific. This is what I enjoy. This is how I like to do it. This is how I like how it came to me. And so that's what I would recommend. Like, sticking and finding the thing that you enjoy about it. What turns you on? Go out and research artwork and look at stuff and say, that doesn't do it for me. This is what does, and find what that is for you.
Okay. It talked about the video earlier about the guy who did the Excel paintings. There's another thing on Facebook as well. There is a comic strip that I saw recently, and it was like four panels. This like younger kid, and he's looking at this older person with like these gold locks, and they're beautiful. And it's like he's got a paintbrush, and he's painting all over, you know, painting all over the walls. And he's like, and the kid is in awe, like sitting there. It's like, oh man, this work is so cool. And you get to the next panel, it's like, man, I wish my stuff that I could do. It could be as awesome as that. I wish I knew what I was doing with some of the stuff that I'm doing. And then the older guy with the beautiful person with the long hair, it's like, hey kid, come over here. I got to tell you something. And the kid walks over there and he leans in and tells the kid, I don't know what I'm doing. and then that's what speaks to that. You do your own thing. You find what you're passionate about, what you want to do.
Yeah.
You start and do that, and you practice and you practice and you practice, especially for art, but not even just for art, for everything you do, for Rocket Punch, for recording a podcast.
Yeah, this goes for everything.
Don't expect to be a savant again on your first try. Like, you have to practice at it. I got better at talking on the microphone from doing this. I got better at understanding like audio editing and video editing and logistical stuff like that because of doing Rocket Punch. And, you know, who's to say that's that practice for me? And
yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you got to find those mistakes, and when you make them, you learn from them, and you learn how to fix them too. And like, that builds confidence, and that's what builds your skill set and your skills and training and techniques and things like that. Absolutely. And we all have to do that. We all have to just like build that skill set.
Yep. Well, Pete, I think we've come basically to the end of our interview here at Creator Spotlight.
I had a blast. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. I like, this is a lot of new things being tried here, a little bit longer format, but I feel a lot more personal and a lot of different topics that we bounce around with in these conversations, interviews, and I loved it. Hopefully you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did, yeah.
Listeners, hope you enjoyed it as well.
Thank you for listening.
Enjoy your ears. The last question, it's always the easy one. How can people interact with you directly?
Oh, so yeah, we talked about my studio at Low Mill. I'm there right now, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. You can also find me on my website, float782.com. as well as my Instagram, float782 at Instagram, float782 at Twitter, float782 on Facebook, and that's the easiest way to find me. Yeah, absolutely. I do stuff through the mail all the time, as far as commissions and sales. Again, you can find commissions information on my website, as well as all those other places, and definitely shoot me a message. I love talking with people. I love answering questions. I mean, I love talking about all this stuff, so this is just fun for me. Yeah. And so if you ever have anything to ask me, or if you just want to ask what games I'm playing or what movie I'm watching or what painting I'm doing, like, I'd love to answer all those questions. So I just love talking to people.
Cash them outside. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
very cool. Very cool. And don't worry, guys, if you didn't catch all that on the audio, we'll have that up on the official post here on rocketpunchco.com. But now I get to do my plugs here. Guys, thank you so much for listening to our latest episode of Creator Spotlight with Peter Luker, a.k.a. Float. As always, remember, guys, you can always go to rocketpunchgo.com. That's where you can find more awesome podcasts, audio stuff. You know, continue listening to the Rocket Punch cast. You can listen to Tank and Spank, our Blizzard podcast as well. You can also go over there to swing to our Twitch page and watch our videos and everything we do. That's all located at rocketpunchgo.com. That's your easy place to find all the stuff we do. Pete, once again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a blast.
I'm glad you were able to pull away from the studio to come chat with us for a little bit here.
That's probably where I'm headed, is right back to my work desk.
Like, you're going to be right over there.
Working on a bunch of TARDISes for Con K.
There you go. Work is never done.
Never.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We will see you on the next episode.